Chair, we would like also to thank you very much for the opportunity. Good morning, honorable members. I have an apology from the honorable minister. You know, it is quite hectic, Chair and honorable members from the side of cabinet. They are having some serious engagements at the moment. As part of you know, their work also to make sure that we put our ideas and thoughts together in responding to some of the challenges that we are dealing with as a country. Honorable Chair, as we have already pointed out, it had been a challenge, this thing of managing time. I have discussed with the CEOs earlier on that they must have their stopwatches ready. 15 minutes is 15 minutes, and so they need to lead by an example. And so I have a full support that they would respect time and they will finish within the allocated time. Without any waste of time, Chair, I would like to give the CEO of the regulator to take us through the presentation. Over to you, Mr. Kozma.
Let me apologize. I forgot that we have put two regulators. NERSA is a regulator also. So let's just make that apology so that there is no confusion about which regulator we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, DG and colleagues. The regulator today is going to be very precise. Ayanda, will you please put up the presentation for members to see, starting with the presentation outline. Honorable Chair, I would like to mention that I'm here with my whole executive team. We'll be fielding the questions at the end of the presentation. And also to indicate, Honorable Chair, that currently we don't have a chairperson because the term of the board came to an end by 30 November 2019. At the moment, we are relying on the PFMA, which makes provision for the...
Sorry, can you try and help that we put the presentation, but you can continue, Mr.
We are putting out the presentation. You can continue, please.
Okay, sure.
I wanted to indicate, Chair, that we are covered in terms of Section 49 of the PFMA, whereby the accounting officer takes responsibility in the absence of the board. So today we're going to move straight to slide number 2, which is basically the outline. I'm going to touch on only 3 key aspects, which are mandate of the SAG PMR. Then I'll explain our achievement over the past 5 years, trying to indicate how we have addressed those changes into the draft. And then we'll finalize by talking about the challenges and interventions that we have put in place to ensure that we achieve on our mandate. May we move to slide number 3? The SAG PMR is a Schedule 380 institution, which is established in terms of the PFMA and the Diamond Act of 1986 and amended in 2005. In 2005, the Precious Metals Act was introduced to add on additional minerals, which are precious group metals as well as gold, into the basket. The mandate is aimed at regulating both diamond and precious metals industries on beneficiation, buying, selling and importing, as well as exporting of rough diamonds and precious metals. In that slide, I think the most important thing of note is to demonstrate the contribution of the precious metals as well as diamonds into the economy of South Africa by showing the sales, production, as well as employment. And I should mention, Chair, that the sectors contribute just under 50% of employment into the economy directly. then obviously the secondary effect of that into the future. Slide number four takes us back to the 5 years to just get an understanding of where we were before we drafted our new draft plan. Slide number four, sorry. In terms of job creation and skills development and value addition, we actually issued 1,274 licenses in those five years, and we assisted 47 new entrepreneurs. And five skills were facilitated by the regulator. A total of 248 licenses were evaluated in terms of the mining charter, just to check progress with regard to transformation. As far as beneficiation locally is concerned, we assisted 15,170 clients to access the GECC, which is a trading platform. And a total of 688 beneficiaries also accessed the GEC. We continued conducting inspections throughout the period, and we managed to conduct 10,850. And you will see in terms of the current start plan, we planned for 8,400 and something, but that number over that number. And we have over the years, there's some interference. Can you hear me?
Someone might be much closer to you with his or her mic on.
Okay, but it's clear and all.
We all switch our mics off.
We are all off. It's only one mic. We're using one mic. Okay, thanks, Chair. During the period, we received two clean audits and qualified audits with findings. And slides 5 and 6 in summary, they just show the trajectory moving from 80 and 82% achievement through 84, 86, and up to 92%, with the major challenges being around access to GEC and to a small extent not meeting the legislated time frames of 60 days. But that has been looked at, and we looked at what the challenges were, and the current start plan is looking exactly into how we deal with that, so we address. Now, I'm not going to go into those slides on our structure, the value chain, strategic outlook, and the AAPP, because I've included all the information for members to peruse. We'll just straight and look at the challenges that we're facing and how can we ask the committee to intervene in that regard. Can we move to 43 and 44, please? Slide 43 and 44. Chair Session, the advent of the COVID-19 was a wake-up call to everyone in the country, and we felt that as an anchor to the department, we need to come up with tangible solutions to that. One of the key issues that we felt need to be put into the mix is the issue of VAT on import. Currently, VAT contributes 15% of the cash flow that sits within us for a very long period of time, and its impact on our industry. There's a strong feeling that we need to look at that and engage part and see how we can exempt that 15% threat from being imposed by us, especially in the light of inter-Africa trade. We need to attract diamonds coming from the SADC region, places like Angola. There's a lot of interest there. If we can get that, it can actually increase trade in South Africa into the world. We also looked at the issue of reviewing and introducing new quota requirements imposed on diamond-based beneficiation as well as precious metals. We particularly looked at in order for us to build a beneficiation sector, we need to look at a new formula on how we can revise the 80-20 principle of how much diamonds must be cut locally and how much can be exported within the same bracket. Also, the Wealth Matters Act was crafted, very little focus was put on how can we maximize benefits in terms of tariffs for exports. So we need to look at that. That will require amendment of legislation. We have highlighted that to the department, but we will need the support of Parliament to make sure that these things happen. And the quicker they happen, the better for us. There's also the issue of export levy. We're looking at once the economy starts to recover, how can we introduce export levy and services? Just in order to make sure that we must benefit for the country. Before the amendment in 2005 of the Diamond Act, a levy of 15% was charged on export. That was reduced to 5%. And we strongly feel that we need to look at this. That way we will be able to promote local businesses. Slide number 44. Due to the impact of COVID-19, I should say, Chair, for this quarter one, there's been literally no trading. That will impact greatly on our revenue stream. Therefore, we'll request that when a budget adjustment are looked into, that also needs to be considered. Another issue that we discussed with the DG Chair, although it may be broader, or actually it's currently beyond our current mandate, is to look at the role of minerals and metals in South Africa and our role in the center of that. To give effect to Section 26 of the NPRDA that talks to beneficiaries, how can we support the South African Reserve Bank to obtain a quota of gold from the mines via our refineries to increase the reserves and thereby boosting the currency? That will require also that we amend the legislation to expand the mandate. It could be the regulator's mandate or any other entity that is deemed relevant for that function. Also, we need to look beyond precious metals and diamonds to include other strategic minerals, of which the minister is entitled to look into legislation and declare a strategic mineral. So those are the contributions that as a regulator we felt we need to highlight at a very high level and bring to the attention of the committee for support to present. I think I will end here.
I really want to welcome the presentation. As always, it's a sound presentation from SAB PMR. Except to say, Chair, we don't have anything to ask, except to say that the presentation referred a lot to slide 44 and 40 something, while the ones that we have really end at 40. So it was a bit of a disadvantage to really follow the presentation, though we got it in advance to read. And from what we have engaged with in terms of reading, we are particularly happy. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Minor, can you take off the presentation on the screen, please? Continue, Honorable Minor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'd like to thank Mr. Khoza for the presentation. I do have a number of questions. The first one is, what is being done to reconstitute the board of the regulator, and what is the progress in this regard? When do you anticipate having that resolved? My second question arises from slide 35, where you talk about receiving COVID-19 relief from Treasury. Given that COVID-19 is having a massive impact on every single element of government and every single department of government, do you think that's realistic? And do you not think that you should be cutting your expenditure rather than looking for additional funding at this time? Then on slide 43, you talk about discouraging exports so that you can facilitate local beneficiation. I would think that this is counterintuitive, given that we need to maximize our foreign revenue as much as possible at this time. So could you explain your thinking behind that? And then lastly, on slide 44, you say here, support the South African Reserve Bank to buy a quota of gold from the mines and buy a selected refinery to increase reserves. I'd really like to understand the thinking behind that, because the South African Reserve Bank has curtailed its purchases of gold significantly. They sit on about 4 million ounces of gold already in their reserves, but they no longer purchase significant quantities, and most of that goes to the export market. So I'd really like to understand why we are pushing for the Reserve Bank to utilize internal funding to purchase gold from our miners. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Malam, Honorable Mtenjane.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can you hear me, Chair? Chairperson, can you hear me? Chairperson, can you hear me? Honorable Chairperson, can you hear me?
I can hear you. It's Cheryl Phillips speaking.
Yes, yes. The Chairperson can
hear
me.
You. We hear you too. Okay, sure. Thanks, Chairperson. No, thank you, Chairperson. Once again, thank you also for the presentation. Yes, but we hear that according to you, we've been issuing licenses to our local people here, and then but that cannot be enough. Issuing licenses only is not necessarily great job creation. I think we think here you need to do more. Yes, we hear that you support also for the empowering of the locals by thinking of building, say maybe cutting, to start cutting diamonds and polishing. That is correct, but that is what we call job creation. That is exactly what you must do. We support you on that one. It must be not only license issuing only, but it must also start creating these companies which will cut and polish diamonds locally. We support that, because that in itself is a job creation. And also, thank you very much also to intervene on the issue of the COVID-19. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Maling.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself and the entire colleagues in the meeting. Let me also join the chorus of welcoming the presentation chair. I only have two questions. I heard Mr. Khosa saying much challenges on their slide of challenges. I'm interested in bullet number two, that the small-scale licenses argue that high prices of metal and diamonds preclude many in participating meaningfully in the industry. I want to understand what is their mitigation on that challenge, or what that they want the committee to do in regards to that challenge. The second one, Chair, he said they received an unqualified audit with findings. What is their plan to ensure that they go back to getting a clean audit? And can they remove their presentation on the screen, Chair? Thank you very much, Chair.
Good, thank you. Mr. Nimalo.
Yes, thank you very much, and good day to you and all the colleagues present in the meeting. Well, firstly, one must welcome the presentation and maybe just comment
Sorry, Chair. Yes. Can I ask the regulator to take out the presentation screen, please, so that we can see the photos of the members?
No, it's out now.
All right. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say, Chair, thank you very much for the presentation, and also to commend the regulator for having swiftly responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. As some of the presentations we have had before have not taken that into consideration. But I just wanted to comment that, Chair. I think that's all. I don't have a question specifically. Thank you.
Okay. Tatumbilangulu. Okay. Honorable Shonyani. Not in. Honorable Phillips.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions, and they don't all speak to your presentation, though. What I'd like to know is, we talk a lot about local beneficiation, and we know that that is the way to go. We also have our president and a lot of our parliamentarians going overseas regularly to try and get investment. However, what I've been approached by some companies who have not been treated very, how can I say, with very, very ethically by this particular regulator. And maybe instead of introducing what you're about and what you do, maybe if you can tell us more about the companies that you're actually working with, the companies you're licensing, how many people they're employing, and how much GDP that's adding to our economy. That would actually help a lot. So maybe if you could forward me a summary of the companies that you are working with and that you are mentoring to actually get into the market and to create the jobs and to add to our GDP. I'd really appreciate that kind of information. Thank you so much.
Okay. Honorable Vulmaras.
Thanks, Chair. I'm also welcoming the presentation by the regulator. Just a few questions. When we last visited them, they spoke about relocation and the cost implications and so on. Can they just expand on where the process is with their relocation, the relocation of their offices? And in one of the slides, there's a question about pending litigation between themselves and employees who earn between 1 million and 1.5. Just an expansion on that litigation, what does it entail? The last one, Chair, in terms of their inspections, are they collaborating with the mine health institutions, or are they doing it on their own, and what are the challenges with regards to inspections? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, honorable members. Before you answer Nabucosa and your team, let me just make this thing so that I used to tell people that at some point there was a professor who used to say, if you change in your work a was into an is, you fail. And that was for only one reason, that he had done economics in Afrikaans. Now, he didn't want to be contested in the English language. Now, my main worry you gave us, and I've been trying to battle, now I can see where this thing is, the amendment on your presentation. That in the presentation was... In the presentation, you gave us 40 pages, but when you present, it's more. So I thought maybe it was maybe a font or any other matter, but I can see where the addition is. So please, in future, even if it means a day before, when you have made amendments or you have reworked your presentation, just make it a point that it is what you also refer. You don't even have to withdraw that one. It's just to say, please note on the following, because you are it's more or less like resubmitting. Otherwise, people will come to the meeting with wrong documents. I just want to make that request so that when you have reviewed your presentation, it's not wrong. You, everyone, even if it means you review it in the morning before the meeting, let the people who are in office see how do they work that review. I just wanted to make that point. With the rest, you can answer the questions. You won't get more than 10 minutes to respond to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I'd like to make an apology for the error in the presentation in terms of the number of slides that were submitted. We did meet the time frame of submitting items. I don't know what actually happened, but I'll investigate it and make sure it doesn't happen again so that we follow up next time when it's done. I'd also like to make a commitment to the Honorable Philip that we do have the information that you're asking for. We will forward it through you, Chair. Now, with regards to the issue of COVID relief, the questions raised by Honorable Milham, the first one with regards to the board. That process, Chair, I think the DG would be better placed to answer, but we've been following up with the department and they've been telling us that it's underway. So I won't be in a position to provide more details in that regard. The issue of COVID relief and cutting expenditure, we indeed as a regulator have looked at various streams within the regulator where we can actually increase revenue. So it's something that we have looked at. But in the short term, we had a challenge in this quarter. We're not going to see the content in the long run. We will have to ask for intervention from the department if the situation doesn't improve. We're hoping that now as the economy is restarting, we'll start to see clients coming in, and that way, through our services, we may be able to increase expenditure, increase the revenue. We are in the process, we have been in the process of looking at various areas, one of which was to say, in terms of the regulations, we are allowed to annually increase our fees. But we stopped that process. We asked the minister to stop that process for now because that would have an impact on our clients, given the situation that they are facing currently. So there are a number of issues that the CFO will talk to. That talks to the revenue stream plan that we have put in place with the revenue minister. So I'll allow the CFO before I talk about the next question that you will hear.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, members. Just to add on to what the CEO has mentioned regarding revenue, it's just unfortunate as a regulator we are not 100% government funded, so we are reliant on revenue generated from the industry. And currently, with the impact of COVID-19 and the lockdown, as was mentioned, we've generated zero revenue. So obviously, there was an indication or question around cutting of expenditure. If you look at our expenditure, it's on slide 36. Medical compensation of employees, 75% of our total expenditure. So that 75% is fixed, a fixed cost. So the rest is 25% relating to goods and services. And it's contract driven, meaning that it's dedicated budgeted expenditure. It's dedicated towards rent, rent of the building, rent related to equipment, our licenses, Microsoft licenses, audit fees, board fees, travel, etc. So when it comes to cutting of the expenditure, I can honestly say there's not that much fat where we can actually cut. We are very limited of where we can cut. There's not much space or area to maneuver in terms of that 25% that's dedicated to goods and services because of the fixed costs related to our employee costs. So, we have the revenue strategy in place that we planned as a target or an achievement for the current year, looking at diversifying our revenue stream. Not just looking at how we can maximize interest on our funds that we invested in our various bank accounts, obviously looking at strategies and interventions in that regard. So currently, what I can say is we are performing various cash flow projections on a weekly basis, just to ensure that we are financially and we remain sustainable. We don't want to be in a situation where we become unsustainable and we need to knock on for bailout. But currently, what I can say is income, which is the current income. And on average, it's just very little on a monthly basis, at least 5 million. We are, to some extent, funding our operating activities from our reserves. And obviously, one knows that when you run a business, you cannot fund operations from your reserves. Reserves are there to cushion the entity in the event of catastrophe, which is currently the case with the COVID-19 and the lockdown. So we are utilizing those reserves to fund our operations and to keep ourselves abreast as the doors open. But obviously, utilizing reserves in the long run is definitely not sustainable. So there was a circular distributed by Treasury where they encouraged the entities to actually apply for additional funding, especially those entities who have been directly impacted by COVID-19. So as a regulator with a hybrid funding model and the fact that 50% of our income is generated from revenue from the industry, and with the lockdown and the zero revenue we're generating, we are definitely impacted. So we will put in our bid for additional funds. There's an opportunity to do so. One can never miss out on any opportunity for additional funds, so we will do so. So the decision-making lies at the Treasury, and obviously they'll have a look at our cash projections in that regard. So I know we've got limited time, so I'm talking a bit fast. Thank you. I think I've said enough on that question.
Thank you, Ms. Kosa.
over to you, Theo.
Thank you, Theo. Chairperson, I think the next question that was asked was with regard to export. I think what we are trying to address, Honorable Mayor, is just to get a balance between export and local beneficiation. Because what we have currently is a situation of almost like a wholesale export of minerals in a raw form. To give an example, on our diamond trade, you have close to 95% of our diamonds going out of the country in the form of export. When we talk about precious metals, most of our precious metals are exported in a form of concentrate. So the head grade coming from the producer, there's just a little bit of work that's done to add value, and the rest is moved out of the country. So we are saying we need to look at the whole formula and try to strike a balance. Once you're allowing export, there must be some quota of minerals that are allocated for local beneficiation. So that is our proposal. And then the issue of the South African Reserve Bank. I think this was an idea that came as an out-of-the-box thinking when the DG requested us to bring forth intervention for reigniting the economy. And we felt that other jurisdictions elsewhere, they are using gold and to some extent other minerals such as diamonds to boost the reserves of the economy as well as boosting their currency. So we felt that I think we can, in this regard, work together with the Reserve Bank and see if there's a way that we can also, talking from what I've just mentioned about striking a balance between export and local relationship, also engage our local refineries to see if this is possible. So it's just the out of the box kind of thinking. The technicalities, therefore, is something that the expert in these two spaces can pick and refine. Then I think there was another question raised around licensing to local people, that there's not enough jobs or not enough job creation. I should mention that we've got a couple of programs that we are looking at, and Mr. Mulondo from the Diamond Trade can just elaborate a little bit on our skills development initiatives and the issues around the lack of the charter and the industrialization program.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the issue of the skills into the industry, what we have realized that diamond industry is a lot of skilled operators, casters, and polishers. What we introduced, which was our internal training as a regulator to train people from the industry, especially new entrants to the industry, in two key areas, the valuation of the diamonds, which is determination of price, and also able to compete in terms of the technology that has been introduced, which is more technology that is used all over the world to determine the diamond value and be able to sell it at the right price, or you buy it at the right price also. We also introduced special tenders for local beneficiaries. Special tenders specific for only diamond beneficiaries. We are cutting the competition between the diamond dealers and beneficiaries, where beneficiaries can only compete among themselves and be able to purchase diamonds. It is one of the successful projects that we want to pursue even in the next upcoming 5 years, because it is yielding the result. The last one, Chair, the skill that we are using in the country, it is based on the type of diamonds we are producing. We are no more producing diamonds that we are able to cut in the country. Most of these diamonds now go to the emerging markets, which have overtaken us in India. Those markets have taken most of these diamonds while are produced here. That's why we're trying to compete and ensure that that skill set is now here in the country is not totally lost. That's why we are concentrating on the diamond beneficiaries to be to that level and compete with the new emerging markets that we're competing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mulonda. I should also add, Chair, that the industrialist program that we are driving now is a multi-agency program. We are sitting with MQA, DMR, State Diamond Trader, the DTI, and the IBC in that forum to see how we can practically help our clients. Because what we see is a situation where, for instance, someone will apply for funding from IBC. But you need someone with an understanding of the type of information that's required by the IDC in terms of your business plan to qualify for that. So as an official sitting with the client, assisting them, makes it easier for them to qualify for this grant and so forth. So we have that kind of program, but we have actually a time basis in getting a couple of industries to succeed. One of them gave me a call actually 2 weeks back and said he wants to come and give me the news. He got a very good package from IBC through our efforts. The next question is with regard to assisting small-scale licensees. We have, as Mr. Mlondo indicated, that put also in place special tender for small licensees. We have also looked at our license fee structure and made it proposal. Thank you, Chair. So we have also made a proposal to establish a new center where these small guys can come in and work for free. That will cut the commission cost that they pay to establish an operator. And the other issue relating to inspections and collaboration with Mine Health and Safety, I should say that we do collaborate with the department. We collaborate with the staff in terms of our inspection. However, there's a difference between the type of inspections conducted by Mine Health and Safety under the Mine Health and Safety Act and our inspection. The Department of Labor and the Department of Health also have jurisdiction over our industry. So there are certain regulations that our industry has to comply with. Ours are mainly around security and the technical aspect. The issue of going back to clean audit. Honorable Malinga, what we have done is we have looked at what went wrong. We appointed independent service providers to investigate what happened in the previous financial year. We identified the gaps and we are closing those gaps. We have been putting systems in place to ensure that we address the glitches of the past. And the appointment of the CFO also helped a lot because once she came in, she did this work. And some of the things that she explained to me earlier on. Chairperson, I think, I hope I've... Oh, okay. There's the issue of relocation. That process is underway. The construction was advanced until the COVID. We were supposed to move towards the end of the year, precisely in November. But now, because of COVID, we have written to the GIDZ to request them to confirm the new date of occupation. But that process is underway. And we have been engaged with a treasury to obtain the necessary approval. The litigation case, I think it's important to allow corporate services to highlight them.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. Just briefly, what we currently having is that in the regulator for 2 levels of structure in terms of employees, for employees below senior management, which we call collective bargaining level employees and senior managers. So for collective bargaining level employees, we normally, for salary adjustments, we normally sit with the union and conclude a multi-year agreement. And based on that agreement, the board will approve what is proposed in the agreement. And once they have done that, they will consider the salary adjustments for senior managers. So in 2017, there was an agreement that was completed for collective bargaining level employees for 3 years from 2017. It ended last year, April 2019. And in the 5, where the resolution was actually drafted for 7.5 2019. And that resolution was actually implemented in 2017-2018. And in 2019, there was a ministerial directive that was received from the Minister of Finance as well as from the Minister of Mineral Resources, which indicated that employees who are earning a salary of 1.4 million, are to get a salary adjustment of 2.8%, and those who are earning a salary of 1% should not get any salary adjustment for the financial year. And based on that, the board could...
Can you increase the period of 1 minute, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'll wrap up quickly. So based on the directives from the ministers, the board considered those two directives. They actually rescinded their board resolutions that they took in 2017 and agreed that they will salary adjustment for senior managers will be 2.8% and no increase for those who are in more than 1.5 million debt. So the senior managers... We're not aggrieved to this particular matter, and they have actually taken the regulator to the CCMA, and from the CCMA they went to the Labour Court. I should also mention that in the process of considering these directives from the Minister, the board actually called the members of management and consulted them and to ensure that they understand where the directive was coming from and the context of the whole situation. And there was no objections that were raised during that particular process. I'll conclude that. Yes. So at this moment, the matter is sitting at the Labour Court. They have submitted affidavits. The regulator has submitted their responding affidavits. So we are waiting for the date. For
thank you very much, ma'am. Can I ask the get the Ambon trader, can you come in please? Take your 15 minutes. It's now I'm giving you extra 3 minutes because of me, at least at quarter past, in fact, I'm taking them if you are not finished, at quarter past five.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and members of the PPC, the chairpersons of the board, colleagues, thanks very much. Thank you, Chair, for giving us this opportunity to make this presentation. With me, Chair, I'm having my executive team, which is going to be in a position to assist me during the entire presentation. The whole presentation, Chair, is... staggered into four space about the background of the entity, together the and the governance issues. We'll be also addressing the issues of the strategic objectives of the entity. As you were interested, we'll also look into the finances of the for the next coming financial year, but we'll also highlight the previous performance in terms of our finances. Lately, Chair, will also talk about the challenges and that the entity is facing, and also some proposed interventions that we... Chair, we will go to slide number 3, which talks about the board. Currently, Chair, we don't have the board. The board chairperson a term office ended on the 30th of November. Up to now, about the appointment of the board. So we hope that the house number 7 about the entity is that the State Diamond Trader was established in 2007 in terms of Section 14 of the Diamond Act. We've been growing as an entity. indicate that the our mandate is also derived from the Diamond Act. However, we are a Section 3B in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Basically, we are not receiving any grant or funding from the fiscus. We operate directly from the funding that we generate as an entity. That's critical here, that it must be noted that we don't get any funding from the fiscus or from the government. Our mandate check is about buying and selling of rough diamonds for local beneficiation. We are about promoting equitable access to and for beneficiation purposes in terms of the we are going and cutting and polishing in terms of the senior cities advantaged communities. We purchase basically 10% of the runoff. I think it's critical that we note that from the runoff, we don't get the entire 10% of the production in the industry. We only get about 10% of the runoff. So we then sell whatever we generate from our clients. So we are dealing with our eight TP for this financial year. Consider that if we did our strat plan that was in January, after the additional analysis, because whatever you do, you must also check what way and under which conditions are you operating. We look at the entity itself, we look at the industry itself, and the one of the critical issues that we have noticed that we have achieved in South Africa. Later I will talk about it. This has an impact on the operation of the entity. If you look at our previous financial year, we'll talk up to, you will see that we also had some challenges with production, because we can only sell what the industry has produced or is giving to the state diamond and trader. We also did our SWOT analysis, where we looked at our strengths, our weaknesses, our opportunity, and the threats that are there within the entity itself, but at the same time within the country and the industry itself. All of this, they've informed our strategy on where are we going as an entity. Our strategic outcome chapter, if we go to as the state diamond says, that the alignment of our strategic outcome to the NDP, we will look at the priorities from the, and also the our strategy that we have reviewed, because our strategic plan document was approved by the board in 2018, the 5-year plan. We have reviewed it as it is. We have indicated strategic which from slide number 15 going forward. But the critical chair is that we have six strategic objectives as an entity. One strategic objective was to transform the diamond industry, where we talk about the purchase of what was in terms of the runoff, and also promoting the HDSA that will be increased by 5%. The other thing that we have also looked at, which is also is about adding value to our clients. We are doing a current feasibility study to check whether we are in a position to open a satellite office at the Northern Cape as part of assisting our clients. The second one, strategic objective, was about skills development. And internally, we are looking at our workplaces, our others, and also reviewing our HR strategy, because our HR strategy will talk to the challenge that we mentioned last year, Chair, when we were presenting at A2 about, when you look at the company secretary, the survey, the legal officer, and some of the posts within the finance department. So our HR strategy will also look in together. We are having strategy number 3, which talks about research and innovation, where we talk in collaboration with other entities like MinTech and CSIR in terms of taking this entity forward. We are looking at good governance. We look at the corporate manual and other related issues. The finance part of it, Chairperson, we basically put money aside as an entity to look at our business together with our financial modeling, because we cannot talk to the business model if we are also not talking about which will at the end of the day look at our revenue enhancement. But this Chairperson will, together with other stakeholders, to check that as an entity, are we still relevant to the situation, and what added value can we give to our clients, even as an entity, where can we go forward? So we are going to review our business model for this financial year. The last one, check, is about partner some SADC countries, because we feel that because the Act does allow us as a state diamond trader that we can source additional diamonds from outside countries. This will assist us and our clients. We are looking at that we will have to do some partnership, and at the same time ensuring that we do produce the added value to our clients. Basically, Chair, that's it that we are doing. But Chair, before I give the finance, I think it's also critical that I must indicate the challenges that we have in terms of the COVID. That's slide number 37 and 38. Currently, there was no production because of the lockdown, not only in South Africa, internationally in terms of the diamond. So as an entity, you couldn't trade because there's no production that was happening. The question is how we've been surviving as an entity. We've only been surviving through the reserves that we have for our operational cost. So as an entity, we had a bit healthy financial situation because of the reserves that we have. However, we must indicate that if the situation continues like this in the next 6 months, we will have no choice but to come to the department or to Parliament to request funding, because we won't be in a position to fund ourselves. Our reserves will be depleted soon because there's no trading. We are hoping that the market will start opening and will be in a position to start trading. Some of the challenges that we have is sustenance of the local beneficiaries, because we are about them. There's no funding for the entity. There's also no funding scheme or guarantee that is available on the market, even for our clients. We know that our clients, most of them are HDS, so they don't get funding from any state agency. Again, they also don't get funding from any commercial banks. That's a challenge that they also have. There are some mitigating or interventions that we are proposing. One is the issue of revolving credit, which, Chair, I must let me just take these few minutes and indicate what is this revolving. Since the establishment of the state diamond trader, we had a facility with the IDC, wherein we had a short-term loan with them. This facility where you, when the producers produce the diamond, will be in a position to go and vitalize that facility, which we'll get in within 48 hours, and we'll pay back within 10 days to the IDC at a prime plus 2. We never defaulted since the establishment of this entity, and that facility is going to assist the entity once the market starts, because now our reserves are shrinking we won't be having a financial ITC. They did the due diligence. They came. They indicated that they are still willing to assist because they've seen that the risks are less. However, we're still waiting for the department to just give that letter to the ITC to say that they are supporting the state diamond trader to use that. So that we have been in touch with the department to submit letters. We had meetings with the department. We are still waiting for the department chair to assist in this front. Other interventions chair are there, but in the interest of time, can I give the CFO also just to deal with the financial issues chair? Thanks very much.
Good afternoon, honorable members of the portfolio committee. And good afternoon to the colleagues. The financials are in slide 20. If you can go to slide 22, that says profitability. Slide 22 shows that financial year 2019-2020, the actuals was for the diamond trading. This is the basis of the budget. On this profitability slide, we are projecting that the net loss will increase to 16 million by 6%. And this is mainly due to expected decline in revenue due to the depressed market conditions and the negative impact of COVID-19. We anticipate profit will slightly increase to 7 million. And the low gross profit margin is due to the high cost of sales. If you can see the line on cost of sales, the cost of sales are high percentage, and this causes the gross profit margin to be low at 2%. And we're anticipating that next year, as in the next financial year, it will increase to 3%. Operating expenditure will increase slightly by less than 1% due to applying strict cost containment measures. We apologize for the grammar on the operating expenditure line. If you can move over to slide number 23. Slide number 23. This, one might ask a question of how does the diamond trader operate if it's making losses as it is for the financial year 2019. This slide is showing that although the diamond trader is making losses currently, it is in a cash positive position. So we're expecting profitability to decline in 2021. And this positive cash flow situation suggests that the state diamond trader is managing its cash prudently, and the entity has cash available to cover its own operations, to buy diamonds, and to pay expenses. And one of the contributions to the differences between the net profitability position and the cash flow is that through the use of accrual something. We account for expenses regardless of when the cash will be received or cash will be paid. So the cash and cash equivalents will likely decline to 12 million from 24 million in the current financial year. And the cost containment measures will be strict. Apply then that covers them in the next slide in diamonds. So you can move to the next slide. next slide shows some of the cost containment measures that we will use in order to manage the net loss position. No new staff appointments will happen because all the critical positions have been occupied. Only essential local and international trips will be undertaken, and there will be a limit on the maximum number of people that will be allowed to travel. We will also ensure that we cut down on the printing and publication costs. For example, there will be more digital copies on the APP. Budgeted capital expenditure, but we'll only prioritize capital expenditure that relates to the to technology for diamond equipment. The following slides are details of what I've covered already. I'll give over to the CEO to continue with the presentation.
Thanks, Chair. That's Chair President. I don't want us to support their own presentation, but we do have challenges still indicated that we need to attend to them, and we have some measures. But what is also critical, Chair, is that immediately this lockdown, we need a round table discussion with all the relevant parties and look at some measures that we want to ensure that we unite the inner. But one of the critical issues that we also need to look at together with other stakeholders is the Levy Act and the Diamond Act, the Telecom Beneficiation, because in terms of the exporting indicated as like other issues that we are discussing or in discussion with them in terms of that we need to do. And also, okay, that's why because people are more concerned about their health and their basic needs. And as an entity, we will be more dealing with a common it's one challenge that we have. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. So we'll talk about some of the issues at a later stage. Honorable members, there is the report. I don't want to make any comments. Honorable Vulmarans, you'll be followed by Honorable Phillips, then followed by Honorable Shonyane, if he's in and is listening, Honorable Bulangulu, Honorable Nimalo, Honorable Malinga, Honorable Tenzane, Honorable Mailam, and then Honorable Mashaude, in that order. Honorable Vulmaran, you can now take off the presentation on the screen.
Thanks, Chair. Let me appreciate the report as it has been done, the presentation, and also appreciate the environment under which the entity operates. Especially during this economic times, and as well as our wrestling with the pandemic that has befell on us. So it should be appreciated that they are operating in a very, very rough environment. On the situational analysis, especially on slide 10, they mentioned that the diamond industry, the South African diamond industry, is over-regulated. And I think that should be an impediment. What do they suggest us as a committee, or where should the committee come in and help? Alternatively, where should the department also try to intervene. I think just leaving it hanging and saying they are overregulated would not help in as far as understanding that overregulation and how we should assist. If they can on their suggestion. One of the mandates of the NPP is to increase or grow the South African diamond cutting and polishing industry by also increasing the HDSA beneficiation environment. Now, there is an opportunity that diamond beneficiation, they would want to make South Africa the heartbeat of diamond beneficiation. So beneficiation is at the heart of their, it's an important factor in their operation and as part and parcel of their mandate. But in the intervention proposals we have at Chairperson, they would want to waive the terms of having beneficiation license. Can they just explain on what is being referred to there? On the other side, they would want to push as far as possible with beneficiation, but on the intervention part, they would want to waive some regulations, and I think that there's some conflict there, unless I'm not fully understanding that part, if they can explain that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. On slide 9, there is a decline in the diamond industry. If they can just explain briefly, is it due to the economy? Is it just due to the overregulation? Are the Zomazomas playing a part in that? Are the informal miners playing a part in that? What is the reason for decline? And then I had the overregulation. If you can maybe just explain why you think it's overregulated and how you think it can be improved. And then on slide 25, the revenue growth there is very bullish. What have you based those predictions on? Thank you so much.
Honourable Phillips, Honourable Sanyane is in. She ended up not coming. Honourable Bilakolo, I doubt is in. Honourable Nimalo.
Thanks, Chair. Can we move on to the next speaker?
Okay. Honourable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me welcome the President. Chairperson, to eat the state don't have the vote, who then runs the entity? And they to fulfill their mandate in the diamond strategy. So how are they going to achieve the mandate when they don't have such a strategy? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Malinga, Honourable Mkesha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And also welcome the presentation. But also, as my colleague said now, let me start by also the NPP just told us, yes, indeed, that they left the board since last year, November, if I'm not mistaken. The mandate is to buy and sell rough diamonds, grow South African diamond in cutting and polishing industry, transform diamond industry, skill development, collaboration with what they think. They think it's better they collaborate with Mintec. All those things. But now all those things, it cannot be possible if they don't have the board. That's number one. And number two, there is no funding for NTC, as they say. And then in a certain sentence, they themselves, they are saying that realization of other requirements by SADMA for their client. And then, separately, all this simply tells us that they don't have a value anymore for what they did for in 2007, which simply means I think it's better they get incorporated to SADMA, then they become one thing. Because to me, they will end up just wasting money for nothing. Because remember, this country, we need a lot of money, especially after this. And then we need a lot of money. So, but here is money being wasted here. Instead, the way we were created was good, because it was for a good purpose. But unfortunately, they are saying it in front of us that they can't do it anymore. Now they want to approve for IDC and all those things. It can't be a good thing. How can they go around and borrow money while they're supposed to make money themselves? We still have diamonds in our country. We still have diamonds beneath our soil in the country. So we have an entity such as SADMA, the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator. Let them be incorporated to that one. Then they become one thing. Then at least we've got the loss of spending unnecessary budget and all those things. And then we help our people. Because remember, these entities were formed so that they can help our people, our local people. Our local people must start to benefit now with the resources that they have in our country, that we have in our country. So for that to happen, we need a clear plan. We can't have an institution that is not having a board, but still it wants to succeed. You can't succeed. You can't have a car without a steering. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Honorable Mylan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by echoing the concerns of, I think it was Honorable Vormerant and Honorable Malinga about the board and the situation there. And I'd really like the Director General to answer the question that I asked him earlier, or that I asked earlier, about what is being done to reconstitute the board and what is the progress on that, when we can expect to have that resolved. Chairperson, then, Honourable Njane said that he'd like to see the regulator combined with the SDT, and I want to fundamentally disagree with this. You can't have a regulator who is also a player in market. You can't combine a trading entity with a regulatory entity. On the slide, on slide 10, under weaknesses, the SDT identifies legislation limitations, and I'd really like to know what the limitations are that they are referring to and how they would propose rectifying that. They also identify that they have a weakness, which is the ability to bring stakeholders together, and I'd like to understand that, why they have that weakness, what's the problem. Then on slide 11, under threats, and Honourable Malinga raised this, the lack of a diamond strategy. This is a tune time to bring those stakeholders together. Again, they should bring together the regulator, industry bodies, the bar, and themselves, and sit around the table and work out what the strategy is. That their strategic objectives are very inward-looking and not looking at some how they could grow their sales and the revenue. They look very much at basically as a tick box exercise. How can we do what we need to do and not look at how we can grow as the. But that said, on slide 38, on the way forward, one of the things they talk about is trading in other precious metals. And I have a real concern around this, because it's the SDT was established in terms of the Diamond Act. And any trade in other precious metals would be outside their mandate. So I'd really like to understand why they think that they should be given authority to do that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mashaud.
thank you very much, Chair. Let's welcome the presentation. And I want to make the first point taken from slide 7, bullet 3, under the mandate to grow the African diamond cutting and polishing industry by increasing HDSA for beneficiation. Read together with bullet point 1, 3, 4, 5 in slide 38, which says they are proposing that we assist historically disadvantaged South Africans to purchase from SDT and government serve as guarantor. Given the fact that the mandate, on the other hand, is to increase assist historically disadvantaged South Africans for beneficiation. This point sits well with assisting. Everybody knows that historically disadvantaged South Africans, which are blacks in general, and African in particular, and if the government is serious about assisting them, it should act as a guarantor to assist them to trade with the SDT. Another point, Chair, is asked by Honorable Mailem of SDT trading in other precious metals. I also want to understand why do they think it will make a difference, but on a positive note, so that we are assisted to enable them to enter into that space if sound reasons are given. The last one, Chair, is on slide 36. They have allocated a budget for building improvements. But on the slide, the last slide, 38, they are saying speed up the operation of the hub on slide third last. I would assume the hub that is being built at the airport. And if why would they budget for improving the building, and assuming that is the current building that they are speaking about? And if all makes sense, can we be told when is the envisaged period to have moved to the new hub? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can you respond, please? Try and stick to the 10 minutes, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take some of the questions, then my colleagues will with Chair. Let me start with the one of the board, Chair. We've been communicating with the department and this aspect. We had meetings. We submitted letters. I'm sure the DG will be in a position, Chair, to assist in that regard. But we've been operating in terms of the Section 49 of the Public Finance Management Act, because it indicates that if there's no board, and then the CEO takes the role of the board. That's what we have been doing. Hence, even when we did our strategic plan, we didn't have a board. We had to do it as executive, to at least so that we ensure that the entity continue to perform its mandate, Chair. The issue about legislation, Chair, this has been a matter that we've been discussing for quite some time now. We, at the internal level, together with the regulator, we started the process. We appointed service providers to assist, and also ourselves. There's a document that we are finalizing, Chair, which we are going to submit to the department itself about all the legislative impediments that are there, and how we propose that they should be resolved, Chair. And we will submit that document in due course, Chair. But we have done our spadework in terms of in terms of that, Chair. The matter that was raised about the one of our threats in terms of the strategy. When we are talking about the strategy, we are referring to, because that's not an internal one, it's an external one. The country doesn't have a proper strategy on dealing with diamonds. That's what we're proposing, that at least as all parties that are involved in diamond, we need to look coming up with a strategy. And in this case, the department, we feel that is the department that must lead. The other aspect that we're also looking at with the shortcomings or the limitation was about the shortcomings in terms of the stakeholders coming together. Previously, Chair, the entity did have a Indaba or diamond Indaba, and the some resolutions that were taken at Indaba, and some stakeholders were there, but not all stakeholders that are supposed to be there. And in this case, Chair, we feel that the department is the one that must assist the entity putting all the stakeholders together. Because as an entity, we are limited to certain stakeholders because we cannot coordinate all the stakeholders. It's a joint effort between ourselves and the department, where we need the department to assist us, Chair, in terms of those challenges. I'm going to give my colleague, Chair, the operations manager to add, and the finance and our legal advisor, because of in terms of the time allocated, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. It's Conrad speaking, operations manager. The question is relating to the decline in the diamond production in South Africa. This is not just to South Africa. It's basically a global phenomenon, and this was brought about by the lack of demand and the economic situation that transpired in the previous financial year and has filtered over now. Producers didn't produce at the levels that they normally wanted to because there was no demand. So it's more based around supply and demand and economic situation. In relation to, the one question relating to the wavering of the, we were specifically talking about the current situation that we find ourselves in. We need to be innovative to assist the industry to actually be trading. And we said, and I think the CEO of the regulator did touch on the 80-20 requirements for those that have got beneficiation licenses. In relation to all the other ones that talked about legislation, I think that my CEO has touched on that it needs a roundtable discussion to look at impediments and how do we improve it and where do we see the industry and what the industry requires for you to actually thrive. I think that's it, CEO. Thank you.
There was a question on slide 36 about the building improvements. We have budgeted the building improvements for the move to the GIDZ, to the industrial development zone. These building improvements are not for the current premises. At the time that we drew the budget, we anticipated that we were going to move on the 1st of November, but post the lockdown, we've had a meeting with the GIDZ and they're indicating that the move would probably be early next year, not on the 1st of November. So those building improvements are not for the current premises. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
There was a question about the movement. The CFO has just covered that we are still waiting for the GIDZ to give a firm date on when are we moving, but we anticipate that we should move around January next year, though the earlier indication was that we are going to move in November.
this also covers the issue of the club, because the new movement or the new building at the GI that also covers the hub. Once we have moved, then the whole strategy will start implementing the whole strategy of the hub. I think it's also critical that I indicate the issue of the IDC loan. So it's a credit facility that we've been using since the establishment of the entity. This facility is meant when we have shortage of finance. The ITC gives us the short-term facility for us to go and purchase the diamonds from the producers. And once we purchase, we pay that the facility to the ITC within 10 days, because it's normally given to us within 48 hours as and when we require it. So this has been a trend for since the inception of the entity. It's not a long-term loan. And what we also do, once we pay within 10 days, with plus 2% of the prime. It's prime plus 2%. So that facility is just there assisting us as an entity, because sometimes the producers, they have a products which are large, which are within outside our capacity to purchase. Then we utilize that facility for that purpose. And here we have never defaulted. That is why the sale of has indicated our finances, even though we don't get funding from the state, but we can still, as an entity, be in a position to continue operating. Hence, we are saying, once the production starts, we continue with our operation. We will be in a position to operate with our as an entity, and we are not a concern, actually. We have our financial position is more or less stable, Jefferson. That's what we're trying to say. But these are the things that we indicate that should the situation remain as it is for now, then we are going to be a serious concern as an entity. But for now, we are in a position that we can still operate. And our clients will still continue benefiting. However, because we're depending on our clients' ability to purchase, which are previously disadvantaged, that's why we are requesting that if they can have that guarantee from the government, they will be in a position to buy from us and will be continuing promoting beneficiation for the country out of the 78 clients that we have, because as we speak now, we are sure that most of them, they won't be in a position to purchase even if the lockdown is open. Then what will happen is that those people that have been benefiting for all these years will continue benefiting. Then it will defeat the whole purpose of our creation of previously disadvantaged clients being given an opportunity or given preference to operate. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. When we please stay on the line, don't drop. Can we go straight to NEFA? NEFA, please, we charge if a minute is charged, if it's a tariff.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I hope the committee can hear us. And I also want to acknowledge the Director General. And once again, thank you for inviting us to share with you our annual performance plan and the budget for the 2020-21 financial year. What I'd like to do is just also acknowledge the presence of the Deputy Chair, Ms. Mali Hongkomo, but also introduce then members of the team that are going to assist me in answering questions at the later stage. And we have Mr. Muzim Mkize, who is a full-time regulator member responsible for petroleum pipeline. Mr. Ntantla Gumede, who is a full-time regulator member responsible for electricity. Ms. Nomfundo Maseti, who is a full-time regulator member responsible for Patgas. I also have the acting CFO, Ms. Ntupeni Rajimana. And, but also indicate that we have Ms. Noma Langa Sitola, who is the acting CEO. Our CEO is currently just on precautionary suspension, and as such, I'll just go through the presentation. If you go to the next slide, just want to indicate that I'm not going to deal with all elements of the presentation, so the focus will be on just the front part, the executive summary, and even in that, the executive summary, which is made up of only 15 slides, I'm going to not go through all of them and maybe spend you know, a few minutes on a few of the slides. So if you find that I'm spending a little bit of time on one slide, don't be concerned, because it's more the key messages that we'd like to get out of some of these slides. And on slide three, and this is one of the, I think, important slides where I'm going to spend a little bit of time on. I just want to indicate that we are a creature of statute and remind the committee that we regulate three industries, electricity, power, gas, and petroleum pipelines, but also that we are self-funding. So we actually get money from levies that we charge industry. And this is critical as we talk about COVID-19 and the budget later on. I think one of the issues that I'd like us to just focus on and just bring to the attention of the committee is that these pieces of legislation have not kept pace with developments in the energy sector. And we are aware that there's been draft legislation that has gone through NetLeg, and however, there still remain some challenges that I'd like just to bring to the attention of the committee. And one of them is the absence, well, the inclusion of an appeal process in our legislation. So we as a regulator have to be both, we have to both regulate and then handle appeals. That's an aspect that I know in the new legislation has been looked at. So what we find that we are now engaged in a lot of court cases because members of the licensees and members of the public do not have an effective mechanism to review or challenge in the decisions that we make. And you know, some of the court cases that we've been involved in is, you know, the court cases involving Eskom. We've had court cases, a recent court case for Patgas, challenging elements of a maximum price methodology. But to avoid spending so much time in court, we're hoping that it's an area where I think the committee and parliament, and obviously the minister and the department can assist us on. The second issue is that some of the legislation, particularly in petroleum pipelines, are fragmented. So we do not regulate the entire value chain. So we have other regulators such as PNPA and PASA, and we find that there's you know, concurrent jurisdiction and fragmented and non-alignment in tariffs and tariff setting. So we'd like, I guess, assistance also with regards to that. But what is also critical is that our current legislative framework provides very weak enforcement. So we can go and make a tariff determination or indicate to the likes of Eskom or Transnet or any of our licensees areas where we think they can improve. but we have no ability to enforce, and therefore, you know, we find that there's no ability to go and make the changes that we think are necessary for the industry. And I think it's an area that needs to be looked at. And you also have problems with municipalities, with the debt and how they use the funding. So we are unable to prevent effectively abuse of market power. And then we have to have regard to formalization of cross-border regulations. If you know that we import a lot of gas from across the border in Mozambique, and so for effective regulation, those are the areas that we'd like to focus on. And there's an issue of bulk determination in petroleum pipelines, and this is important to reduce regulatory burden. So what our intention is to make sure that we do not always have to regulate aspects that are not, do not need to be regulated. But we haven't gotten finality on determination of bulk in petroleum pipelines. And then there's the issue of negotiated pricing agreements, where we do not have a long-term framework for determining these tariffs. And this one is important because it constrains our ability to work with industry players to go and give specific industries special tariffs, you know, to support them, especially during the times where we have challenges in the sector and especially in the economy. And there's also an issue, finally, of finalizing the South African Petroleum and Liquid Fuels Charter. And this is key to guide us in economic transformation. So our legislations do allow us to ensure that we encourage the participation of historically disadvantaged in the sector, but some of the charters are outstanding. So if you go to the next slide, here all I need to highlight is that we acknowledge, I think, the critical role that we play in I think, the economy of South Africa. So what we try and do is facilitate affordable and you know, accessibility in the industry, but we balance the interest of all industry players. Just to highlight, though, that when we put the annual performance plan together, we took cognizance of changes that are happening in the global energy space, and so some of the challenges are rapid shift and shifting in geopolitical landscape. You know, the fourth industrial revolution, new technologies that are affecting the sector, environmental concerns, and so we've taken those into account. And I want to highlight those that this plan is just the first year of the 5 year of the new, sixth parliament. So it's just an aspect of some of those areas. And on the next slide, wanted to just highlight that we've made sure that we are completely aligned with the National Development Plan. And if we achieve those objectives, we ensure that there's reliable, efficient energy at competitive rates. And we'll have energy that is especially equitable through expanded access. And that's also focused on the environment. If you then go to the next slide, here I'd like to indicate that to ensure orderly development of the energy sector, clearly we do our work through certain functions, and some of the functions are licensing, registration, setting of tariffs, but we set certain priorities there are some priorities that transformation of the energy industry contributing to a competitive energy sector, you know, ensuring there's a fair balance among stakeholders, there's no discrimination. And the one thing, though, is with COVID-19, some of the functions that we've been able to do, we are not able to do, such as public participation. So traditionally, we consult with stakeholders in all the decisions that we make, so we are having to change some of these. Now, we are unable to do compliance by doing audits because we cannot travel, you know, and go on site. And but it's areas that we are focusing on. If you then go to the next slide number 8, and here again I'd like to highlight a few things. The target identified in this plan are supporting two government priorities: economic transformation and job creation, and the creation of a capable, ethical, and developmental space. So these targets are aimed at achieving the following growth outcomes: economic growth for the country, availability of secure, adequate energy, access to affordable energy, and development of an appropriate regulatory framework for the industry. If I then speak to slide number 10, we'd like to highlight, though, that, and you'll see when we present our results, that we are a people-based organization. So there is an important focus here in strengthening our technical capabilities, you know, so that we can go and effectively deal with the industry and support the development of the sector. And then if I then jump to slide number 11, and here I'd like to highlight a few things. That we have a very strong balance sheet as a regulator, so we don't have any issues of solvency or liquidity, and in fact, you'll see in the results that we presented that we are deliberately budgeting for a deficit. That's because it's our intention to go give back to industry some of the levies that we've collected over the years. And I think this will be important, especially in this time of COVID-19. And we've had clean audits for a number of years. And some of the figures that are in the slide will be impacted by COVID-19. For instance, the volumes that we used in projecting the revenues, like in petroleum pipelines, the volume of oil of petroleum has decreased substantially with the lockdown. So we may miss some of the numbers. However, none of these things are of concern. But if you look also at the expenses, the manner in which we're going to operate may differ from what is reflected in here. So traditionally, we go throughout the country, conduct public hearings. So all the travel and accommodation and training and that we used to do, we may have to do electronically as the committee is doing now. But there is an investment that we're making in IT in this regard. So if I go then to the concluding slide, which is on slide 15, I'd like to say that this plan was concluded before the breakdown of COVID-19. And COVID-19 will have a major impact in the manner in which we run our business. However, we don't anticipate to have a major impact financially on NASA because we think we have a very strong balance sheet. What we have done as a regulator is in May we approved a business continuity and response plan that is aligned with governments issued by government. So we think we are ready to conduct our business. But we are also acutely aware of the three issues that are facing the economy, which is not only COVID-19, the recent ground rate in the credit rating and the pending recession. So we're going to be working with the Department of Minerals and Energy and hopefully also with Parliament to ensure that we continue to address any challenges in the sector. And some of the elements that are in the plan that we sent to you may change. So I'd like to stop the Honourable Chair and then take questions. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. You kept exactly on time.
Thank you.
You lead by example.
Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. That is Nesta's submission. I thought I was going to make a comment so that we don't have problems. Honorable members have been doing very well. And it's my request. Let's stick to the questions to the entities. We will get an opportunity to deal with our own views on the comments by other members. I don't want the meeting to degenerate where a member wants to respond because there's been reference to what he or she has said. Can we stick to the entities, and then when we deal with the draft report, we will then be able to get an opportunity to have discussions, even disagreements amongst ourselves. It's just an appeal. Let's just focus on the, if a member raises a matter, that's an issue to have he or she views the matter. That is the member's view. Let's take it to the committee where it will then be entertained, not here. I don't want to be the chair, and then I come back and must now meet it when somebody says, no, I need a right of response to what was raised on me. It's just an appeal. Can we now take questions to NERSA in this order now? One, Honorable Mashaule. Number two, Honorable Nailam. Number three is Honorable Mtenjani. Number four is Honorable Malinga. Number five is Honorable Nimalo. Let me jump, except if they treat their presence, Honorable Dilakule, Honorable Shonyane, and take Honorable Phillips, and then Honorable Fulmaran. Honorable Mashaule.
Thanks very much, Chair. Just a few questions. The first one is that I hear the CEO, pardon me if I'm wrong, whether the chair was presenting, said that the CEO is on precautionary suspension. It is still money. What did he do? I mean, there must be some reason why he's on precautionary suspension. That's the first thing. The second one is that there was a headline, I think, yesterday that says NERSA gave a green light to Eskom for price hiking. And I stand to be corrected. This is part of why Eskom and NERSA were going to court. If that's true, was it a directive by the court, or it was NERSA satisfying itself and made that decision? And if so, what had changed from what they thought was not necessary to give such a green light to today? I think those are the two questions that I have. The last point is that I want to thank you, Chair, for the last intervention you are making. I was a bit worried when somebody disagreed with a member making a point. I thought, where are we now? Should we disagree with other members as well? Thank you very much for that, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by saying I will not be censored on what I can and cannot say in committee. In terms of the rules, I have the right to say whatever I want. But let me ask some questions to Nersa. With regard to the suspension of Mr. Fawley, firstly, have charges been laid against him? Secondly, what is the status of the investigation? Thirdly, have these allegations been previously investigated, and if so, what is the finding? And lastly, when do you anticipate this investigation process to be completed? The second sort of area that I want to touch on is that there is justifiable concern over the length of time NERSA processes take. So my question is, what is being done to speed up the time taken to reach a, or to make a determination or issue a license? It takes far too long, and your processes are incredibly cumbersome. What can you do to speed that up? My last question is, you mentioned, or you touched on the travel accommodation and training of 30 million rand, and obviously the impact of COVID-19 is going to have a significant effect on your ability to move around. One of the things that you mentioned is that you are looking at an investment into IT in this regard. I'd really like to know if you've re-looked at budget and if there are any particular savings there, because at this stage you're running at a loss of about 10 million rand, and it appears to me that this is an area where you could save money. And associated with that is your public participation processes. Is there any way that you could make those public participation processes virtual? Thank you.
Honorable Mela, let me just come here. I think I've always been said I'm the most French person. I think it's absolutely insensitive to say, and when you censor a person, is when you say the person can't speak and that matter is not here. I never said you can't raise a matter. I'm saying so that we don't spend time and not deal with. You are correct to raise your disagreement. If I put it crudely, you are correct to put your disagreement. You are correct. But that must be taken to the meeting so that Honorable Intendant doesn't come back and say, let me explain myself because I disagree with what you say. That's the issue. So procedures of meeting allows the chairperson to rule in a meeting on a matter. I can't censor anyone. I never censor the thing. You are wrong what you are raising. I'm saying the platform is not necessarily the correct one. But again, I'll say this. If you want us to spend that time on that matter and allow NERSA to go without answering questions, only entertaining members, then I'm one of the most free people to allow that. But I'm saying because we are listening to presentation, if I open my sentence to say I disagree with what is there, for example, I'll make a simple example because it was an SDT, there has been views that we raised and there has never been contested that SDT does not have to exist as an entity. But that matter had to be taken to the committee when it deals with the tax report. So it is not, I think that's the point I'm going to say. Can we please, I respect you, can you please also respect the fact that from a chair where I sit, I request that you take that matter to the meeting where us as members will be delivering on the class report, please. Honorable Intendant.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. And also, thanks for the well presentation. Chairperson, it's fine. I know that why are we here and what are we going to do here. So I won't entertain people like Mylem, Honorable Mylem, anyway. He's there, don't worry.
Can you go to NERSA, please?
Yes, I'm in NERSA, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I said, I'll thank for the web presentation, yes.
Well, there are some just little few questions which mostly being asked by people around the communities and all those things. Some questions they ask us as members of this portfolio committee. So I'll necessarily ask those few questions on that order. Now, the first question will be, what is the distinction between a price and a tariff? Well, those are frequently asked questions by most of the community and all those things. So the second question will be, is your standard for determining a price or a tariff the same? And then the third question will be, what are the essential elements of the test for an excessive price or a tariff? The fourth question will be, have you identified some of the causes of the unreasonable prices or tariffs? Do you identify them, the causes? Now, the last one will be sort of a comment. Your exact contribution on concerning COVID-19, we just want to hear what did you contribute. Look, in terms of maybe let's say you have decided to lower a tariff or lower a price or something like that. Just want to hear what is exactly your contribution on the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report by Nersa. I'm just puzzled by the statement that was by the, I think it's the chair. The first statement is opening line that said, the legislation is not in pace with the development in the industry. Mine will be to say, Chair, who is supposed to get the legislation to be at a pace where the industry is at, and why hasn't that happened? If it's us, why haven't we seen that legislation that needs to be changed? And I think I would also support Honorable Mahlaule on the issue that he raised, that they have found common ground with Eskom, if we could get more clarity on why they had even to go to court with Eskom to fight over tariffs. And if they say they have amicable solution, did they think, is that amicable solution also including poor people who can't pay the high
the tail pipe
that
Eskom
is
ringing
on board. Thank
you, Chair. Honorable Nimalo. Babu Zwete.
Can you switch off your mic, because your papers are tipping you. Honorable Phillips.
I'm here, Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I'm here. What do you need from me?
Go ahead. Well, on you now on the question.
Sorry, Chair. No, I actually don't have any questions. I also just wanted to find out about the suspension of the CEO, and that's been covered. Thank you so much.
Chair, I welcome the presentation. My curiosity was the same as Honorable Mashaule and Honorable Phillips with regard to details around the precautionary suspension of the CEO. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, let me raise just few issues besides the point of the CEO, which is an administrative matter. I'm just if there can be clarity, because some of the matters that are raised, we may take them for granted. In your executive summary, I think it's page 4, that's the opening sentence. It says NERSA's vision to be, where I think NERSA's vision is to be a recognized world-class leader in energy regulation, is the foundation on which the implementation of this mandate is based. Now, I'm trying to look at the mandate, but also the fact that how do you define a regulation on the one? It might be opening the mic or something that is there, or some something that will have the echo. I'm one of the teachers, understanding that the regulation is also subject to socio-economic conditions in different geographical locations of the global land. So I think for me, I don't want you to allow this thing to go unclarified, but it's being raised here. Now, the second thing is that if there can be clarity, because where I feel that NERSA might find itself caught up is the regulatory relationship that it has that must manage. If you can understand, in your consideration of whatever that is required between what I would call the private regulation, the interface with the consumer on the other, the deeper issues, let me put it like that, because from where I'm sitting, one might argue and say, the higher your tariffs, the higher you grant tariffs to the other entity, I won't mention by name, the more you are making the difference, you are actually contributing to what interparty to comply or to afford out the city. So what these inner issues that probably will not be, you may not be exposed to that at the end of the day. Well, there's a general perception that in the entire exercise is just listening, but already there is a particular position of view that which has been adopted, and that view is nothing else is the middle route or is a management issue. There is no absolute scientific application that is being made, and to look at as to whether with the consideration that will be made does it increase the base or does it reduce based on the basis of incapacity to afford. So if I can just get this clarity, because I think it remains very critical. We may be dealing with a non-growing base, and you could be one of the people who are being told that the reason people can no longer meet some of this demand is because of the financial burden that is put through the granting of higher tariffs. So if you can, we can get an answer, can provide an answer to that.
Thank you.
Honorable Chair, is it all the questions then?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Except if Honorable Ilangulu, Honorable Numalo, Honorable Ilangulu, and Honorable Sonyane are here. Okay, continue. Yes.
Honorable Mashaune, yes. There seems to be a number that is 01-2401-4600. That is active at the same time with the speaker on the floor. Doesn't have a name, but it's really on, and I was struggling to hear you. Is that what I didn't want to disrupt?
Please, can we? Okay, thank you. Can we?
Yeah, I just muted that number, Chair.
Okay. Can we all switch off our mics and videos, and only Nelsa who's responding will have the mic on? I'm switching mine too.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Chair. As I indicated at the beginning, I'm chairman of Nelsa, and I am supported by full-time regulator members, and I will allocate the questions. I think that's appropriate to some, but I'll deal with some of the governance issues. And just as it relates to precautionary suspension of the CEO by the minister, all I can say is this: the matter is still ongoing. In fact, in the early phases, it's a result of whistleblowing that was received, I think, by the minister. So, while some work has been done, it probably will not be fair to go and talk about the details, I think, in public. So I'd like to say, Honourable Chair, that just a few things relating to the specifics, particularly those that were raised by both Honourable Mashaule and Honourable Millingham. So COVID-19 has obviously had an impact in some of the steps that you indicated, whether the charges are laid and whether investigations have been done and completed, what is the status. And so some of the timelines were affected by that. That senior needs to have representation, and lawyers were not regarded as an essential service. So finalization of this is also affected by, what is happening with the COVID-19. As a regulator, we do not trade, so don't handle a lot of money. So most of the allegations, in fact, you're going to find that are process allegations. So you're not going to find that there's been billions or hundreds of millions of monies that are stolen and that sort of thing. And so perhaps it's probably the most I can say in relation to the precautionary suspension. But it's more, processes that have been followed and things of that nature. So that's the first thing I just want to deal with. And perhaps, Honourable Chair, maybe let's deal with some of the questions as they arose. This is from Honourable Mashaule. What's happening in the news with the tariffs, and the question that you ask is, was it a directive of the court, and what has changed? Now I'm going to ask Mr. The full-time regulator member for electricity to I think, deal with the question. This is Mr. Gumede. Mr. Gumede, are you able to deal with the question? Okay, as Mr. Gumede gets ready. The connection doesn't appear to be good. Let me just give a brief explanation in this regard. So the answer to the question is no. This is not a directive of the courts. That in fact, this is just part of our regulatory processes and methodologies. And just to explain to the honourable members is that our tariff methodologies envisage two things. So we first set a tariff based on assumptions of the future. So ESCOM comes and when they apply for the tariffs, they assume certain things. They assume what will happen in the economy, what sales will be, and that sort of thing. An element of a tariff methodology is what is called a regulatory clearing account. It's an RCA. It's an acceptable methodology in a process. So what that RCA does, it allows both us as a regulator and the licensee to go back and say, we made certain assumption about the future, now what has happened in reality. And so the decision that was contained in the press recently actually just handled the RCA. So it does make certain adjustments to the tariff that was given to ESCOM based on the assumption, but it does not change, and it definitely was not the directive of the court, and it has not changed the, so nothing has changed, so the court case is still ongoing. So that's the question, second question from Honorable Masaule. And maybe going to the second question to Honorable Balaam, I think the one relating to the CEO I dealt with. And the second question relating to the length of time it takes to process the, whether it's licenses, can this be speeded up? The, as a regulator, we have to balance the interests of both the public and the licensee. So our methodology does of necessity require of us to consult with the public. So, and that actually covers all aspects of the work that we do. In fact, even our own meetings are open to the public. So if a licensee applies for a tariff or a license, we publish it in the press. We consult and we guided by legislation. Some of them is CAJA and legislation of that nature. And, and that, in fact, is a necessary element of the work that we do. We have done work to go and try and see if you cannot shorten the process. So the timing is actually coded in legislation. So our various laws do indicate how much time we need to take, but it is a necessary balance because we could take a decision and not consult affected individuals and find that their views are not taken into account. So there is work that we continue to do to speed up the process, but we cannot not consult with the public and those people who are affected by our decision. And on travel and accommodation, are there any savings? I will ask the acting CEO to comment, but suffice to say that when I did the presentation, I indicated that a lot of the work that we do will have to change, and one of them is what we talked about with public consultation. And we are, in our plans, looking at mechanisms that we can use to go and do the public consultations electronically, and we actually anticipate savings. One thing I have to say, though, is what you see in the financials that are presented is not necessarily a lot. It's actually a deliberate exercise that we took to not charge, to basically limit the amount of levies that we charge industry, and so that we can give back and some of the tariffs that we charged industry over the years. So we are not supposed to be making money as a regulator. So to the extent that we've accumulated surpluses in the past and it's sitting in a balance sheet, our intention always is on a smooth basis to try and give some of the money back. So there definitely will be savings. And even while we invest in IT, and because we have to obviously keep up with the fourth industrial revolution, we don't believe that it is actually a concern that what we are reflecting a deficit. And the issue of virtual public participation, I think I have covered. And maybe can I ask CFO if you want to add anything on potential savings? CFO?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to add that the allocated budget for travel and accommodation primarily consists of three elements. So there is a budget that relates to compliance audits that we do. Then there's a budget relating to public participation, as well as travel relating to training and development. So in as far as the first two are concerned, particularly on the compliance audit, assuming that we are able to get to a level where we will be able to resume our activities soon, there would be a need to ramp up some of the work that should have been done in the first couple of months that we've missed in the year. So there, you're not going to realize any savings. But in so far as training and development is concerned, there are some training interventions and conferences that would have taken place during the lockdown period, which would no longer be taking place. So in that respect, we might realize some savings. But I think it's important to note that, as the Chair indicated, we would need to review our collection of revenue in light of the impact of COVID-19 and realign our spending to that. So as the revenue declines, we would obviously have to look at our revenue projections and align our expenditure to that. So that's all I wanted to add, Chair. Thank you very much.
So if you then go to questions raised by Honorable Machenjwa, the first one relating to the distinction between prices and tariffs. And let me give this one to Ms. Nomfundo Maseti, who is the regulator, full-time regulator member responsible for CATGA. Ms. Maseti?
Thank you, Chairperson, and the Honorable Chair for giving us the opportunity. I'm going to answer the question regarding the difference between the price and the tariff. The price, the way that it is defined in our legislation, it is the charge for the molecule itself. So it is the charges in our case, the charge for the gas molecule. In our case, for gas, and we regulate from our side in terms of the legislation, both the tariff as well as the price. Now, what is the tariff? The tariff is the charge for the network services, meaning for the transportation of gas whether that gas is transported by pipeline, like in this case we'll be approving tariffs for the pipeline that comes from Mozambique in the gas fields in Bande as well as in Temane from Mozambique, and land that pipeline in Secunda at the Sasol operations in Secunda. So we'll have a tariff for that. So it is actually the cost of transportation of energy in this case, whether it is gas and in others, it will be also for the infrastructure that is utilized in other sectors. I'm not sure whether the chairperson will then also ask the other full-time regulator members, but if I were to sum it up, it is merely the cost of utilizing the infrastructure that transports or that stores energy. So storage of energy, whether in petroleum or gas, then there will be a tariff for that. It's a cost of service. As well as also electricity, it's a blended price there. So that's why in the legislation, Electricity Regulations Act, it uses tariffs as well as prices interchangeably. So because then you get a bundled price when we approve for ESCOM, taking into account the CAPEX part of it as well as the cost of electricity, that is those primary energy cost of coal and OCGTs and all of that. So all of that is bundled into the tariff that we approve for ESCOM. Petroleum, it will be the storage as well as the pipelines and loading facilities. In gas, it is merely only for the pipelines as well as maybe the mobile facilities. But in gas, we've got, if Chairperson, I may also go to the next question that is related to that.
Yeah, then, please answer all the four questions. Are the standards the same? What are the elements of excessive pricing? And the cost of please. Thank you, Ms. Mazzetti.
Yes, I don't want to waste time. So because they are different, the price as well as the tariffs, and the standards are different in the legislation as well as the regulations that are promulgated by minister. So they also call for the different regulatory methods or approach. So for the price of gas, the law says that we can only approve and not set. Here's the mandate here that we also want the parliamentarians to consider. We do not have powers to set. We have powers only to approve. It's a weaker mandate compared to the one that you can set and change things the way you want. So you are just bound to approve. If you are not agreeing, you have to send it back. So you don't have to say, here's what we can approve. We don't agree with you here, and therefore we set our own. We don't have that power as a regulator, which is the core mandate. So because of that, we had to carve the methodology so that it is linked to that limited powers and the approach of regulation that is in the legislation. So we've got the maximum price methodology that we have developed. It sets a very different standard. And it must also be supported by whether or not the conditions of the industry are competitive. So all of those elements from a legal point of view and economic point of view, they must be well supported by the regulator. And also at the Concord ruling that was made recently actually touches on both the economic aspects of what we need to consider as well as the legal aspects that we need to consider. So that is the precedent that we have now that gives some guidance now going forward for the regulator when it comes to the prices of gas. Now, with the tariffs, how we determine them? Again, in gas, we have a different methodology because it is linked to the legal mandate. Now, the way that we had to do it, we had to provide a menu of different methods that are internationally recognized. So if it's the rate of return, we also have the cash flow model and the hybrid of some of those methodologies so that we provide the flexibility and also avoid a temptation where we may want to stipulate how much the shareholders are supposed to recover. That is simply because our mandate is not to set. Our mandate is to approve. So we have to navigate a very sensitive and delicate territory. And hence, then, the methodology for tariffs is the way that we have done it. And even there, in the GAS Act, we have requested, working closely with the department for quite some time, that the GAS Act be amended to assist us in terms of those regulatory gaps. And, Chairperson, if I may touch on the key areas for determining the prices. Chairperson, the elements are outlined in the methodology, which is that we need to make sure that prices, for instance, are competitive. What does that mean? Competitive does not necessarily mean lower. It just actually allows you to apply some form of a benchmarking, because regulation is supposed to mimic a competitive outcome or competitive market conditions. So hence, in our approach, we have now and we have revised the methodology to mimic what is happening in a much more competitive industries or markets around the world. What did that do then in terms of this approach? It has reduced significantly the level of maximum prices that the regulator will now, going forward, approve for the licensees. So you're going to see that impact of the price restructuring going forward when it comes to the price of gas, that it is quite significant, Chairperson. Chair, I think unless I've missed out something, I may then. And then again, Chairperson, if you look into those standards and methods, they will not be the same, because in gas, since it's an infant industry, and also because of the approach that was taken in the legislation by the legislature to actually give it a sort of a limited approach of regulation, it will definitely be different from that of electricity as well as petroleum. So they are not the same across the three sectors or industries regulated by NERSA. And hence, we will not have the same methodology or standards when we approve prices or tariffs for gas, electricity, and petroleum, because of the legislation that is different and gives us different mandates. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just a final thing. Contribution to Prevent 19, here we as the regulator.
4 minutes.
Okay. Perhaps let me then go to the other questions. So some of these I'll just handle them very quickly then. So we continue in terms of contribution to COVID-19 and tariffs. I think we continue to explore, how we can do this. However, we still have been constrained by our laws and methodologies. And then going to questions by Honourable Malinga, where we said who is responsible for legislation and relating to my comments on when I said legislation haven't kept pace with development in the industry. I think you as legislators and parliamentarians are ultimately responsible. And however, there is work clearly that needs to be done, and we do continue to engage with the department and of Minerals and Energy and then the minister. All our legislation do go through the normal processes like NESLEC and NCOP. And so we have had draft legislations that have gone through the processes and come back and back. So cabinet and everybody does get involved. But in the end, it's you as parliament that will need to go finalize this. And then on common grounds with ESCOM is the case that we our new full-time regulator member for electricity is unable to connect. We do try and engage with that. Are you able to connect? Are we able to get common ground with ESCOM, and why do we go to court And do amicable solution include the poor, Mr.
Honorable Chair of the Committee? I just want to make a quick comment on this and say, unfortunately, in regulation, it's about striking a critical balance between conflicting interests. One is about trying to get an industry to grow and be stable. That is, it must get a good return. At the same time, getting an affordable price or an affordable tariff for the consumers. So it's that balance that a regulator needs to make. And sometimes that balance is not palatable to somebody who's made an investment. But however, what people just want in most cases is just to be able to be spoken to. It's about managing stakeholder relations. So in fact, it's not that anything has changed necessarily between Eskom and NERSA. The only thing that has changed is our ability to actually engage. And we like to believe that that will assist in better managing the relationships going forward. For instance, in respect of the recent RCA or regulatory clearing account, NERSA and Eskom had applied for 27 billion, but NERSA only afforded it 13 billion. But the issue here is that all that Eskom would want to be considered is can we be heard? And that is the issue at play here. Now, the question is, how do we balance the interest of the suppliers versus the interest of consumers? Now, NERSA is meant to be the arbiter between the two parties. And as one needs to remember that the most expensive energy is energy that is not provided. That is the first part. Now, we need to be, as NERSA, to be talking to both the suppliers as well as talking to the other stakeholders who are actually the consumers. And that is really our job. Thanks, Chair.
And maybe quickly, in the 1 minute that's left, let's deal with the questions raised by you, Honorable Chair. And I'll try and be as brief as I can. Because I think your question related to our mandate and your question was, what are the deeper issues? Is there scientific application? Are we trying to get a middle ground? Let me just say this, that we are an economic regulator. And however, although we are, and you'll hear that we are said to be an independent regulator, we do not regulate in a vacuum. So we regulate within, I think, the policies and policy prescripts of the state, and they differ. Regulators in other sectors throughout the world will have methodologies that they take their own circumstances into account. So we do have to take into account socio-economic factors that are here in the country. What we do though is we do a balance. You'll see that our objective is not to have cheap prices. Our objective is actually to have something that is affordable. And in our methodology, we use tools to do the balance. What is critical, though, is we need to have a sustainable industry. And that means that there's no point in having cheap electricity and find that you cannot have players in the industry. You cannot have licensees wanting to make money. So there's an element of science in calculating the returns that they need to get. So there's some element of scientific basis to this. However,
thank you, Chair. Sorry with this.
That's fine.
I'm looking at time. The time is really against us. Let me just stop you there. Accept my apology. So that I'll see in other instances the committees just run dry without notice. Can I just take this opportunity? Thank you very much. But the reason I'm saying is that I think this is a very serious matter of public interest. And before we do everything, I need to alert everyone, including the department and then the entities, on what is going to be
immediate to follow, and what are the probabilities. But before I say this, I'm worried about two issues that were raised by members. I wouldn't remember recall the correct names, and I think, DG, in your closing statement or remarks, please take this into consideration. One is the clarity that was needed and was not, in as much as the State Diamond Trader tried to respond, it was directed to the DG, and I realized I never gave the DG a chance to respond. There was a question around the status of the board at State Diamond Trader. I hope I'm correct. And probably I should have came back to that question to ask from the DG, because it was asked to the DG. That is the first question. The second one, I think it arises again with, in as much as NERSA and the chair has tried to answer, it arises with regards to the issue of the CEO of NERSA, who is on precautionary leave. I think in your summarized closing remarks, whatever it is, please can you try and answer those two questions, because those are questions that I think they remain unanswered. The reason I'm stopping you, I accept and are more subject to the more detailed and official, if I were to say, to constitute a presentation on this board. We are not asking it on the basis of that's why I quoted from, because we talk about the question of being a global, most, whatever the name now, I can't go back to that thing, but he has got a most recognized global regulator, whatever it is. Now, that's why I was saying different conditions in different states or in different countries may not be the same. So I've now realized that I would be unfair to expect you that if you give me an answer in 1 minute, I will be doing justice. Even if you are an economic regulator, that on its own can generate another question on top of it. So just bear with me. But before, I will then state what is possible. But let me give the DG, so that the DG doesn't come after me. He may raise things that may warrant me now to respond to him too. DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member.
DG, I was going to ask that, is there still a DG in the department, because I see that you are quiet.
No, Chair, you know, as a matter of protocol, you know, we allow members to ask questions and the entities to respond. Then at the end, I'll come in. And so I thought that is actually the protocol that we must follow. But no, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity. I think we have been raising our appreciation in a manner in which members have dealt with both the department and our entities, including our subsidiaries. I think we have also learned quite a lot out of this process in terms of what we would also need to go back and do as a department, because as I've said previously, that your responsibility is to do oversight over the executive. And so we are happy that hard and difficult questions have been posed to the department and even to the entities. And so ours is to deal with all those issues that we have raised as the PPC. Honorable Chair, in responding briefly to the questions that have been raised by honorable members, I'll be very brief. On the issue of the boards, I can confirm that we have complied with all the requirements in ensuring that the adverts are out for the two both the regulator and also the State Diamond Trader. And so very soon we'll be effecting the appointments after we have followed all the other due processes. That is one. Two, Chair, I think the request for information, I know that sometimes we commit to the portfolio committee that will sponsor you with some certain information. Then after some time, we'll come back and say that, no, we should have or the people that we need to release their information are having some issues and so forth. And so I would like to plead with honorable members that we will process everything accordingly, but you must also bear in mind that some of the information that we are having, it is between us, you know, the element of confidentiality between the entities and the clients. But you know that in terms of the law, you do have a right to ask information, access to information. And so I thought that I should just raise this point. Lastly, Chair, the point that has been raised around the NERSA CEO, I would like to make an addition to what the chairperson of the board has responded to. The minister received a full report from the board of NERSA with specific recommendations to the minister after they have conducted their preliminary investigations on the allegations that were made against the CEO. And the minister concurred with that, and the CEO was ultimately put on precautionary suspension. And also, Chair, I think the chairperson of the board has also touched on this point. I'm just trying to put more emphasis to it. The board of NERSA has been directed to deal with the matter. Of course, I mean, you know, confining itself within all the due processes, and they are both expected, in fact, the board is expected to revert back to the minister with the recommendation.